Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, U.S. banking heavyweight JP Morgan Chase & Co. plans to double the number of private bankers serving Chinese clients from Singapore over the next 2 years. Well, that's according to a Bloomberg report out today by reporter Chanyaporn Chancharon. And she joins us on the line now with more on what's shaking up Singapore's financial landscape. Chanya, thank you so much and welcome back.
Thank you, Rachel. Good to hear from you again.
Always wonderful to have you with us. So Chanya, tell us, what more do we know about JP Morgan's moves here in Singapore?
Well, first of all, the private bank at JP Morgan has been present here in Singapore for decades, mm-hmm. but it has been focusing on the local market, meaning serving the Singapore wealthy and also those in neighboring countries like Indonesia. So it has quite a substantial presence in Singapore in terms of private banking. The expansion in China of its China team, it's quite in line with many other banks that also have such teams in Singapore. Think Morgan Stanley, for an example. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, with a large number of Chinese business people, the mogul, the tycoons, billionaires heading here, it's not a surprise. JP Morgan set up this China team about 2 years ago. It's also important to note that Singapore is the only Asian location mm. for the bank to book assets of clients, meaning that if you want to put more funds in their accounts or open new accounts, the assets are parked in Singapore. So this is quite an important point because many other banks, they have booking centers both in Hong Kong and in Singapore for Asia.
Right. And that really leads on to the next question, because I was going to ask you why expand the base here in Singapore, but I think you've just answered that. So maybe you can tell us how large was the team initially and what kind of numbers are we looking at when we say they're looking to double the number of private bankers serving Chinese clients from Singapore?
Sure. Currently, the bank has about more than a dozen private bankers. These are just bankers, yeah. In a team, there are also mm-hmm. analysts, back office, and support functions. But private bankers alone serving the Chinese out of Singapore, there are more than a dozen. So in 2 years, Mr. James Wei, who heads JP Morgan's private bank for Southeast Asia, he kindly shared with Bloomberg that he's going to double the headcount. So we will see something maybe just about 30 or under 30 in 2 years' time. Mm. But this also came from the fact that the team is new. Other teams are more mature and have been around longer and have more assets. So the size of growth, the rate of growth for this China team is going to be larger because it comes from a very low base.
And sticking with other banking moves here in Singapore and recent interviews that Bloomberg's had with banking heads, Bloomberg recently spoke to DBS head Piyush Gupta, and he shared that he welcomes the increased regulatory scrutiny of financial technology companies in China and elsewhere in Asia. What does that mean for the sector, Chanya?
Hey, I just have to start with a few points just to get the context right here, because the way things are in China, it's quite different from what we have in Singapore or in other jurisdictions. Each fintech industry in each country, they have different trajectory. In the past decade, Chinese fintech firms such as Ant Group, which controls Alipay and a number of lending platforms, as well as Tencent, which owns WeChat and a neo bank called WeBank, they have evolved into somewhat financial institutions. Just have to be clear that these companies, they are tech firms, but mm-hmm. they have morphed into big financial institutions because they have lending platform, they have payments capacity. The lending can be quite massive, but because they are tech firms, so they have never been regulated the way banks like, say, ICBC and Bank of China or China Construction Banks are regulated. But now, I mean, in the past few years, they have been competing with banks in terms of market share in business areas like micro lending and payments. So the fact that Chinese regulators are bringing them into fold, it means Beijing wants to ensure stability of its financial system and making sure that fintech firms that handle so much money of consumers like you and me, they are well capitalized. And this would help remit risks to consumers who park lots and lots of money with these firms. But the initial lack of control of these fintech tech firms also mean that they have grown so fast. And a well-capitalized company usually means less risk and safer for consumers like us and also for other companies that deal with them.
You know, these comments by Piyush, they actually came on the back of a question about, as you mentioned, Ant Group and Ant Group's shelved mega IPO this month, because Chinese regulators did outline new rules to curb the rapid growth and leverage at the nation's more than 200 micro lenders. So how have other players been impacted by the new rules? And what does this mean? Yes, by the clampdown. And what does it mean for the industry landscape?
Well, to be fair, this is not the first time that Chinese regulators are hitting micro lenders or peer-to-peer lenders quite hard. It has been at least 3 years. There used to be thousands of such lenders in China. The number has been coming down significantly, and the regulation, the latest one, are kind of like making sure that companies that handle consumers' money are well regulated. Recently, the China Supreme Court also ordered interest rates on private lending to be lowered by as much as 10 percentage points. It used to be 24%. Can you imagine that? It's just like credit card charge. Now the ceiling is 15.4%, but still that's four times the benchmark rate. In a way, what it means to us, you can argue that this helps with consumer protection. But on the other hand, small companies, individuals who may be in gig economy, not all of us have equal access to bank loans and credit. So it depends on how you look at it, really.
We're speaking with Chanya Porn Chancharun, reporter at Bloomberg. And back here in Singapore, we're also seeing plans to award digital banking licenses by the end of the year. And this is despite the tightening scrutiny in China. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, I think that the expectations are high that the Singapore Central Bank, the Monetary Authority of Singapore, may announce the results. This is speculation and no one has ever confirmed it, but that's a speculation that announcement may be during the FinTech Festival, which will be held from next week, the 7th of December. This will be done virtually for 5 days, 24 hours round the clock. So it's an exciting time. And the MAS told us that there are, but in general, what we know from the MAS is that they are on track to announce the results by the end of this year. What about these results? I mean, this is going to be the first time that technology companies with non-bank parentage tech firms, just like Ant, could hold a banking license, digital banking license in Singapore. It has been almost a year now that the applications have been submitted and there have been rounds of scrutinies and interviews to ensure good services and stability. So let's see who will win, Rachel.
What do we know about the applicants, Chanya?
The MAS never confirms the identity of any applicants. The only thing we knew is that 14 out of 21 applicants are considered eligible to be considered. Many of my sources that say that those in the running include the joint venture of Grab and Singtel, C Limited, which owns Chopi and is backed by Tencent. We also have local groups like Razer and groups formed by V3, which shares the same owner as the Osim, the massage chair company. We also have groups formed by ByteDance, among others. They are all big names.
What kind of approach is MAS taking?
Just like regulator around the world, the regulator like MAS, they have to place, they want to ensure stability and safety on consumers. But also MAS is known for its emphasis on innovations and technology, which could improve the standards of financial services in Singapore. Also, MAS wants to see financial inclusion, meaning that small companies, people maybe around the age, still have access to finance and credits. As well, bank as Singapore is, you might be surprised that small firms, SMEs, and individuals, some of them still struggle to access financing. But at the same time, MAS has to ensure stability. Also ensure that if any company, any new digital bank collapse, they must have smooth exit plans that mm-hmm. wouldn't disrupt the financial stability in Singapore.
So one last question before I let you go, Chanya, and that's just jumping back to the interview that Bloomberg had with Piyush Gupta from DBS. Did he share more about his plans for DBS going forward? I mean, it has been quite an unprecedented year.
Yes, he did. He did. Just some background. I mean, we all know that DBS is the largest bank here in Singapore mm-hmm. and also in Southeast Asia. But I think it's outgrowing this neighborhood. DBS is now becoming more and more Asian bank. I mean, it has very big footprint in Greater China, particularly in Hong Kong. And recently, it got a license to run securities venture on the mainland China. So Mr. Gupta kindly shared with us that he is looking into expanding in large emerging markets in Asia. Mm. And he mentioned countries like India, Indonesia, and China. And you might have heard that DBS earlier this month got a blessing from the Indian regulator, the RBI, to take over Lakshmi Vilas Bank. It is quite small but an indebted, but it is it has like about 500 branches mm. in India, in the state of Tamil Nadu. And you may know that Tamil is one of the official languages in Singapore, and many of the Tamil people here, they have strong connections with that region. So it will be good to see how it goes. He hasn't shared much with us, like how much he plans to do with Lakshmi Vilas, but we are very keen to hear from him.
Wonderful. Well, Chanya, thank you for sharing all of those updates with us.
Thank you, Rachel, for having me.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Chanya Pornchancharoon, reporter at Bloomberg, right here on Primetime on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.